We're told in this ninth chapter that we ought to do certain things every day. He calls it a daily habit. And the first was to become consciously aware of the presence of God. Now, without the presence of God, we have nothing except our human selves. With the presence of God, we are prepared to open ourselves to divine infinite law and to become conscious of the presence of God means to accept that presence as the substance of my being. I cannot be something apart from that presence. No matter how important I may think I am humanly, if I am apart from the presence, then I and the Father are not one identity, one substance. Occasionally in the world we find many important people who are unaware of their unimportance. And they are marvelous people on this human level. We read in this morning's paper that Frank Conniff was the top man with the Hearst chain. He's the fellow who went with Hearst and Kingsbury Smith over to Russia, and no one had been allowed behind the Iron Curtain to interview Khrushchev, and he was smart enough to get the assignment and the okay from Khrushchev. He did some marvelous things in the journalism field. A very handsome, charming, intelligent man, the kind that everybody loved. Capable. A real power in his field. But why at 57 is he gone? Why at 53 did he have these massive heart attacks? It wasn't overwork. It was the inability to know that the kingdom of God is within me. It was the belief that I am this fellow you see. And somehow, somewhere, there's a God who loves me. And this is separation. And it isn't enough to know that isn't true. That isn't enough. You can know it on Monday, but that won't help you on Tuesday. It must be a continuing consciousness. And this is the meaning of Joel's caution, that part of your daily experience must be the conscious awareness of the presence of God. As a continuing fact. And the awareness of that presence means here, now, where I stand. And then because of the presence of God here, now, where I stand, as my spiritual substance, I am under spiritual law. No other. These things shall not move me that are not spiritual law. That presence of God which is my substance needs no defense, and therefore the only protective work you do is the knowledge of that presence. You don't have to look over your shoulder. The knowledge of the presence of God as the substance of my being, extended as the substance of all being, as the infinite substance. This is our daily requirement. That's the whole point of his chapter. He calls it preparation for spiritual living. And I want to read this paragraph. Since God constitutes the law of my being, I am governed by spiritual being, spiritual law, spiritual light, and spiritual truth. There must be an inner acceptance. And then, because of the inner acceptance that spiritual law is all that governs you, you cannot say, I am under the power of lack or limitation or anything else. You're only under spiritual law. And for you, the only law that exists is perfect spiritual law. There are no other powers. This is daily, 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 until it's my consciousness. I know God has never been paralyzed, never blind, never deaf. I know God never had indigestion. Spiritual law prevents the possibility of these afflictions. If I have them, it is because I have within me a belief that there is another power besides spiritual law. And that belief is showing forth as my affliction. Whatever my problem is, it is the visible evidence of my belief in another power besides spiritual law. And when I rectify the belief, when I come home to spiritual identity, and therefore only spiritual law is acceptable to me, then there is no place for the world mind to express in my consciousness, and it cannot externalize as these afflictions from which the world suffers. He goes on to say this: if we engage in this daily practice, and we must, we shall soon find that we have received in our inner being the secret of the universe, the secret of harmony, the secret of the Holy Grail. We shall find that we have the secret of life once we know that the consciousness of the presence of God is the only reality unto us, and there is no two-law universe. There's only the spiritual law universe of God. And when we have that, the discords, the inharmonies will melt gradually, but certainly and completely. He speaks from his experience. We have seen that everywhere the Spirit of Christ walked in the form called Jesus, this was true. And all of us have experienced that wherever the consciousness of perfect spiritual law is, the non-powers of the world are exposed in some miraculous fashion. They lose the ability to imprison us in false belief. Now, as spirit, conscious of the presence of God as your spirit, you must further accept that you are completely self-contained. That means there can be no lack in Christ of any kind. And so we bypass all physical evidence, because the physical evidence will always tell you that you are not self-contained. And the question comes in those who have not had the experience yet. Well, if I'm self-contained, what do I do about these appearances that I'm supposed to bypass? Even though we have lesson after lesson on that very subject, you will find your mind saying, what do I do then about this thorn in the side? And that's just exactly what he's telling you to do. Rest in the knowledge that only spiritual law is here. That which is not spiritual law is the universal hypnotism. It isn't here. That's the meaning of hypnotism. It isn't here. You don't try to overcome what isn't here. Even trying to overcome hypnotism is tightening the noose around your neck. It's the recognition that it isn't here. You can never suffer from reality. You can only suffer from unreality. Every form of suffering is a cosmic hypnotism. That's the great revelation of the infinite way. Every form. And there is no power to cause it. It is being caused by that which is a seeming power to one who is not aware that only the power of God exists. The non-problem is caused by the non-power, which you accept as a power and therefore as a problem. And this is aptly named, this chapter, Spiritual Exercises to be Practiced. And the reason for the practicing of the presence and the spiritual power without opposite is because we are learning to accept the inexhaustible resources of our own being. We are learning not to go outside ourselves, not to make the mistake of thinking that in my own being something has been withheld. There is no thing, no person, no condition that you need that is not within your own being now. The mere thought that it's possible for what you need to be outside of your being is to lose that which is yours. You might as well lose it, because even though it's there, you have no use of it. Now this brings you then to a level of consciousness which is more aware of who and what you are, and of the limitlessness nature of your being. We have discovered within ourselves that every time we know the truth of our being, that we never have to pray for a need. But before we ask, in the mere knowing of the truth of being as self-containing, all that we need, that which we do need does appear as form, as condition, as thing, as person, and as place. The miracle of spiritual existence is that which we need, being ever-present, it always externalizes itself in the three-dimensional material world, provided we stay there in the now and is of spiritual presence as the one and the only. And let the Father do through your transparent consciousness that which the Father is ever doing, being God here, now, and everywhere. Everywhere in this universe, God is being God, fulfilling God. Now, many of us talk to people on the level of people. And I'd like you to consider a little exercise to practice with yourself. It's very difficult, very challenging, and very rewarding. Now, we know that matter has no intelligence, and yet we all talk to matter all day long. We talk to the boss, we talk to our employees, we talk to our friends, we really talk to matter, as if it had intelligence. And sometimes we don't think it's very intelligent, and we even say so. Well, it isn't. It has no intelligence whatsoever. Suppose we try to see, too, that the mind, which is in that body, or in which that body is not the divine mind, and there's no point really talking to it either. because it's as much illusion as a material form that it externalizes. Then why talk to it? Now here's a test of your spiritual development. See if you can do it for one day, or even for an hour. Establish consciously that you're not going to talk to the physical form or the mind of an individual. You're going to talk to the divine mind. Even though there's a person there, you're going to address your remarks to the divine mind, as if for you the person had no existence. And to do that, you're going to talk from your divine mind, divine mind to divine mind. And you've got to do this in such a way that the individual doesn't know you're doing it. That you're talking from divine mind to divine mind and looking straight at a person as if you're talking to a person, so that the person thinks you're talking to me, to him, to her. You try that for a while as an exercise and see what it does to you. You begin to feel some of that which was happening when Jesus spoke to his disciples. He never spoke to them. He was either speaking to the cosmic mind or the divine mind in them. Never was he speaking to an individual mind. When he said, "Peace be still, it is I," do you think he was speaking to Peter? He was telling the divine, to the cosmic mind, "You have no power here, friend." When he said to Pilate, "Thou hast no power over me," he wasn't speaking to Pilate. He wasn't speaking to a lump of flesh which had no intelligence. He wasn't speaking to a human mind. He was letting us know that this cosmic mind which is pretending to have power has no power. He was showing us the universal mesmerism we must face, not the individual. When you conquer that universal mesmerism, you'll find something in you saying, "Right, I have overcome the world, not the individual. There are no individuals. There is only a world mesmerism." And so, dwelling in the consciousness of the presence until you can re-identify not as a person who has found the presence, but as the presence. The presence that I have discovered, I am. The truth that I was seeking, I am. In your re-identification now, all that you had seemed to be, a corporeal person of a certain size and weight and density, certain age, certain sex, all must be re-identified. There are no corporeal beings in heaven. There are no men or women in heaven. There are no sizes and shapes in heaven. There are no material conditions in heaven. There are no backaches and heartaches. Deny thyself. When you are consciously accepting the presence, you are consciously rejecting thyself, the mortal self. You're putting off the old man. And so Joel's commandments to us have a double-edged sword. I can't just sit here and say, "Oh, the presence is here." That won't do me any good. Everything that the presence is here. The presence is all, the fullness of the presence, the infinity of the qualities of the presence. Can I say the presence is here, but I'm unemployed? The presence is here, but I'm paralyzed? The presence is here, but I'm sick? Then I haven't done my homework, because only the presence is here, and the presence is not paralyzed, not unemployed, not sick. Only the presence is here. This is the practicing of the presence. Only the law of the presence is here. All else must be hallucination. All else must be the false mind, the non-mind. Self-contained is the acceptance of the presence of God as I and the Father, one self, and therefore self-contained. And this is your preparation for the activity of grace. When we do the chapter on grace next week, number 10, if you haven't read Contemplative Life lately, you may have forgotten that at the end of the chapter there are a list of other chapters in other books, which Joel had called the must chapters. I know that since that was written, there were other chapters that would have been included had this book been written later. But nonetheless, there are 7 or 8, or I don't know how many, chapters in other books that are listed, and it wouldn't be possible, perhaps, for you to read them all for one class. But we're going to have to do those in a measure, sort of double up on ourselves. The important thing is that because God is present here where you are, and God is in heaven, you must be in heaven. And you cannot violate the laws of heaven and expect to remain in heaven. You cannot violate the law of perfection, which is spiritual law. As a matter of fact, it cannot be violated by anyone. You do not have the power to violate it. That is an illusion. There is no power on earth to violate the law of heaven. Only the will of the Father is being functioned in heaven now. Only the will of the Father is functioning where you are. And that will being your perfection. Everything that denies it must be unreal. As you dwell in this, you will be out of the body. For there is no physical body in heaven. There is no physical body where the presence of God is realized. There is no physical condition where the presence of God is realized. There is only my kingdom. And when you are out of the body, through your daily practice of the presence of Spirit as your presence, and the ever presence of spiritual law as the only law, you will lose the illusion of a temporary life. You will know, as certainly as you know anything, that all temporary life is illusion. There is no such thing and never has been. It is part of the universal mesmerism. It simply has no existence. There is no such thing as temporary life. The temporary life that we are also concerned about doesn't exist. Take no thought for your temporary life. It isn't there. The only life you have is the perfect forever life. And in your absent from the body experience, dwelling in the essence of being, that false belief will fall away. With it will fall away the concerns about that temporary life. You will see that life is ever itself. All life is ever living, ever being. You have never been separated from life anywhere in this universe. All life is one. I, being life, all who I know being life, neither this human sense of life nor death can separate us from life, for that is our name. We must know these things so well that the complete freedom of being life, finding its way through our consciousness, releases us from the limitations of a temporary life. For those limitations are as unreal as the temporary life. The false horizons created by the cosmic mind, accepted by the human mind, the false horizon of a beginning and an end, the false horizon of an absence of this or that. These are all false horizons. The false horizon where there's a beginning of a pain. There is no such place. We are self-contained in Christ. And we are to live as pure spiritual being, enjoying the fruitage of it. This is the glimpsing, the living, the awareness of a soul realm. Where all the horizons vanish. There are no horizons. There is the limitless self. And all good flows in through that limitless self and appears where the corporeal form seems to be, as the sustaining influence of that form. When you're in your limitless self, your infinite being is flowing to a point called the human self. That's the point where the infinity of being is made visible. That's the point of grace. And ultimately, it's the point of release from corporeality. We should be in that consciousness which says, I'm not concerned about an end of the world because I know there was never a beginning of a world. The false horizon of the beginning of a world and an end of the world has no place in spiritual consciousness. The Lord our God is one. And we have no other gods, no other identity, no other being, no other power, no other belief. The perfect infinite consciousness called God is the perfect infinite manifestation called God. And that manifestation is Son of God. That manifestation is I. When we are feeling this limitless self, the fruitage of it is quickly visible. There's no attachment to person, place, or thing. There's no clinging love. There's no fear of loss. You're in spiritual consciousness. You're in your illuminated self. Now, if we've learned anything from walking on water, from stopping storms, we've learned that matter is a mental obstruction with no reality in God. We have learned that the conditions of matter are purely hypothetical and hallucinatory. They're mental energy appearing as. We have learned that we are invisible self made of the pure Spirit of God without boundaries. and that there are no margins in heaven. This is our living consciousness. We are not here to glorify a human being. We are not here to seek status. We are here to let the will of God, which is perfect, express itself as our living being. We are here to let the mortal sense of self step aside and behold that living will of perfection making manifest itself in all things. We are here to hold a line against the belief that the power of imperfection is present where we dwell. We are here to be faithful witnesses of the all-power, the all-knowledge, and the all-presence of the spiritual Father called God. And when you have accepted that your function is to be a faithful witness, all of the need and struggle and striving to do and be something is taken off your shoulder. The responsibility is not on you. The government is on the Spirit itself. Your function is to witness that activity, denying your human selfhood. In setting forth our identities, because we're still unformed in that identity, in our consciousness, we have all tried to claim certain things for ourselves. And now we will learn that there's nothing we need claim because we are. And we can humbly let our identity express to glorify the Father. If we will glorify the Father and not a human personality, we will find that all that is required of us is present in infinite measure. My will be done. I in the midst of thee am greater. And so infinity is now moving in our consciousness as our consciousness to the degree that we have humanly seen the folly of mortality, the false horizon of birth and death, the cosmic mist which comes forth as appearances. And we are facing all claims, not as my claim, but as a universal claim, which I refuse to accept as my claim. Standing in my identity and watching spiritual substance dissolve its suppositional opposite called material problem. Everything you do this way is under law, under grace, under the will of perfection. You need not press a button. You need not pull a trigger. You need not lift a sword. Stand ye still. Next week we'll discuss grace. And if you will, I'd like you to do with re-identify just what you did with identity. You did identity. Now do the same thing with the word re-identify. And I'd like to hold what you've already done until you've done that so that you're not guided to repeat yourself. Come up with a complete new feeling about it. And then you'll see yourself within 3 weeks after you've done the first one, how far you've developed. However, if any of you want to still take whatever you've done back with you, you may, of course. So I leave them here. Anyone can take the one that they want, if they want to take it. If you want to leave it, leave it. Try it now with re-identify. R-E-I, so forth. And make up your crossword, paragraph, thought, sentence, whatever you wish, until you get this feeling of being in heaven, in the is, in the now, in the law of perfection and divine love, where no opposites can possibly occur. That's the re-identify. That'll prepare us for the experience of grace. Thanks so much.
Thank you.